You're listening to a podcast of a program produced in 2015 as part of Aloud, a series of dynamic conversations, readings, and performances that take place in the Mark Taper Auditorium at the historic downtown Central Library in the heart of Los Angeles. These programs are presented by the Library Foundation of Los Angeles, which supports the Los Angeles Public Library. To support Aloud or learn about the entire podcast collection, please visit www.lfla.org/aloud. Tonight, I'm welcoming you to a very, very special presentation of Langston Hughes's Ask Your Mama, 12 Moods for Jazz. The poet Langston Hughes once said, "The blues is everybody's river." And he's a writer who dipped deeply into that source as well as into jazz. His was a lifetime of devotion to black music. Tonight, we all get to join a conversation with Laura Cartman and her cast about Langston Hughes, about this beautiful work, and we'll have time for some questions afterwards, and you can talk to the artists. Four-time Emmy-winning composer Laura Cartman created a huge musical event based on Hughes's masterpiece, Ask Your Mama, in 2009 for the Honor Festival curated by opera star Jesse Norman at Carnegie Hall. And we asked Laura for Aloud if she could create a chamber version of the piece for our smaller stage, a little smaller than Carnegie Hall. And that's what you'll hear tonight. You'll hear excerpts from the original score. You'll hear Laura talk about her creative process of discovering and working with Hughes's poem and with her artistic collaborators, who are this fabulous team of musicians, soprano Janai Brugger, pianist Victoria Kirsch, bassist David Young, and vocalist Tara Stinson. And tonight also marks the release of a new recording of the orchestral work, which is for sale in the lobby afterwards. And we also invite all of you to stay after the Q&A for a little reception in the courtyard, and hopefully you'll get to mingle with these wonderful artists. Please enjoy Ask Your Mama, 12 Moods for Jazz. So that's a little bit from my new recording of Ask Your Mama. And let me start by thanking the library and thanking Louise and everybody who made this all possible. And we're so honored to be here. And how interesting it is to be here. Because being at the Central Library, I have a core question. Why would the most epic poem by perhaps the greatest American poet of the 20th century be unknown and critically neglected? So we're going to look at that tonight, and maybe by the end of the night we'll be able to answer some of those questions. Probably not, but that's another story. At any rate, I'm a composer, as you know. I'm also proud to be a second-generation native Angeleno, which is rare. And I can thank you. Well, thank you. Thank my father for having me here. But I grew up here, but I went to Juilliard, where I studied with the most esoteric composer, Milton Babbitt. And so I was getting my brain going by the day, and at night I was singing and playing jazz. So I always lived this kind of bipolar musical life. So I moved back to LA, where I immediately sold out, became a Hollywood composer. But I did keep writing art music infused with jazz. And about 10 years ago, when I was recovering from scoring a 20-hour miniseries by Steven Spielberg, I came across this in the library. Ask Your Mama, 12 Moods for Jazz, Langston Hughes. And I opened this book, and I saw music, which is pretty extraordinary to see in a book. So, Tara, would you sing us a little bit of the Hesitation Blues?
Hello, Central. What's the matter with this line? I wanna talk to that highbrow of mine. Tell me how long will I have to wait? Just give me 298. Why do you hesitate?
All right. So what do you think the lyrics mean for that traditional song? What's he hesitating? What's he waiting for?
I think he just kind of wanted time with his lady friend.
Okay. So why must we hesitate? He wants to get going. Okay.
Right.
Right? And the Hesitation Blues was famously recorded by Louis Armstrong, and the book is dedicated to Louis Armstrong. So, Janai, would you sing us a little bit of your version of the Hesitation Blues, which is from the dedication, My Music for Ask Your Mama? Thank you. So as you'll see as we go through our exploration of the book, Hughes means both. But I think he means, why must we hesitate? What are we waiting for? What is our country waiting for? Why can't we get to where we need to go? And it's hard to read here, but later when you get your free book, you'll be able to examine it. So you can see, or I'll read for you, the traditional folk melody of the Hesitation Blues is the leitmotif for this poem. So already, he's also giving you another hint by using the traditional folk melody of the Hesitation Blues, but also invoking the Wagnerian term, leitmotif. So we've got this kind of duality, these kinds of two musics that he's referring to. In and around it, along with other recognizable melodies employed, there's room for spontaneous jazz improvisation, particularly between verses, as the voice pauses. The musical figurine indicated after each Ask Your Mama line may incorporate the impudent little melody of the old break, shave and a haircut, 15 cents. Okay. So Hughes does this. And what this means is that's a joke. Because Ask Your Mama, 12 Moods for Jazz, refers also to the dozens, which is basically a game of a verbal sparring between two people, and it's like your mama jokes. I mean, that's what the story is. So you'll hear throughout the evening, ba-ba-da-da-ba, ba-ba-ba, and then it comes after your mama, like that. You'll hear it as we go. So the other thing that I saw, which was so incredible, is the poetry, all in caps. But in the right-hand margin of the poem, Hughes says exactly how the music should sound, and actually quite specifically. So for a film composer, this is like having the most erudite director in the world telling you what to do in the most poetic, effusive terms. So I said, this is something I gotta do. And I didn't know when I was gonna do it, but I knew I would do it sometime. So then I got a phone call. And as you can see, this is all written on the Real Vocal Book, which is a book of jazz tunes. But that was just by mistake because I happened to have a pen and I was writing on the cover when I got the phone call. And the phone call was from Edgar Beitzel. Do any of you remember Edgar or know who he was? He was the COO of the Los Angeles Opera, and he got very ill and died quickly. And he called me and said, I want you to do an opera with Achim Fryer and Jesse Norman. And I thought he had meant like to call like John Adams or somebody else, some other like major, you know, operatic composer. But he called me and wanted me to do this piece. So I'm writing down Jesse Norman, Achim Fryer, and then the idea that he had for a work. And although I loved his idea, I kept thinking of Ask your mama. How many of you know Jessi Norman, know who she is? So Jessi Norman is an iconic soprano. And in the first pages of this poem, as you'll see, Hughes talks about Leontine Price. And I thought if Jessi Norman had had the career that she had in 1961, you know, that she has now, that she would definitely be somebody listed in the poem. So needless to say, I swapped this, I pitched this. 5 days later, I was meeting with Jessi Norman, and she said, let's do it, okay? After singing me spirituals on her couch this close to my ear, but that's another beautiful story. So I started, this is a copy of the original manuscript. I started embarking on some research, and the first thing that I wanted to do was make sure that it was spiritually, morally okay for me as a white woman to work on this piece. And so I got in touch with Arnold Rampersad, who's Langston Hughes' biographer, and I sat with him for many hours discussing many aspects of the poem and Langston Hughes' life. And he assured me that it was not only okay, but that Hughes had worked with Kurt Weill and tons of other people, and that, in fact, that if I could bring this work to the public ear a bit more, that would be exactly what Langston Hughes would have wanted. And as I mentioned to you, being a film composer, I have a certain ease being able to bend between stylistic, you know, the stylistic requests that Hughes had. So I felt it was a good project for me, and so did Rampersad. I started assembling a playlist of what Hughes might have been listening to, what he might have had in his head when he was working on the poem. I decided to use an orchestra, even though it seems obvious to use a jazz combo. I don't know really what he had in mind. I mean, there were plans to do the piece with Thelonious Monk that never materialized, but it's interesting because the course of the poem, he requests, you can see it right there, it's hard to read, again, the hesitation blues against the trill of birds, but the melody ends in a thin flute call. So he requests flutes and hunting horns and all kinds of different drums, and it felt to me like it was an epic work that deserved an orchestra. So I decided to do it with an orchestra. Then I knew I had Jessi Norman. For the Carnegie Hall performance, we brought in the great Nina Freelon and The Roots, which really changed the game quite substantially. So, and you'll be seeing a little bit of them this evening. They will be come and visiting us in strange ways. So I had The Roots. I had Tariq Trotter, the great spoken word artist, who was the contemporary embodiment of Langston Hughes, and of course the great Questlove, who's, you know, today's Art Blakey for sure. So as Louise mentioned, it was done at the Honor Festival, and we reissued the poem, and you'll be all getting those poems as thank you gifts for tonight. So those books. Yes. You give something free and you get an applause. All right. So anyway, soprano, jazz singers, vocalists, spoken word artists, you see this. One of the extraordinary things is that we had two laptops on stage. One laptop was actually triggering the voice of Langston Hughes, which you'll hear a little bit of tonight. And the other was playing archival samples, because I wanted this music to be authentic. So if Langston Hughes asked for the traditional 12-bar blues, I wanted to give it to him. So I definitely wanted to use sampling and use that kind of technology and bring it into the concert hall. And you see, we did it at Carnegie Hall, we did it here at the Bowl, and then she came home to the Apollo Theater in March 2013. Okay, and now we have the recording, which stars Janai Brugger, Tara Stinson, Black Thought. So we have The Roots, Medusa, and we recorded it with the San Francisco Ballet Orchestra. Okay, so let's get into the poem itself. You see, it starts in the left-hand margins. Can you all read that? Kind of, sort of. In the quarter of the Negroes. And Hughes asks for the rhythmically rough scraping of a guira. And what's interesting about it sounds to me like in the quarter of the Negroes. It's like a train starting, right? You can almost hear a train coming out of a station. You know, the sonic manifestation of that. I can't leave my notes. Okay. So the rhythmically rough scraping of a guira continues monotonously until a lonely flute call merges into piano variations on German Lieder. Aha! And right next to that, you see the line, "Yet Leontine's unpacking." So Hughes asked for a piece of German Lieder. And I asked Jesse, what should we do? And she said, let's find the songs where my repertoire and Leontine Price's repertoire intersect. And so we chose Gretchen am Spinnrade. Would you guys like to sing a little bit of that for us?
Meine Ruhe ist hin, mein Herz ist schwer. Ich finde sie nimmer und nimmer mehr. Wohl ich ihn nicht hab, ist mir das Grab, die ganze Welt ist mir vergelt. Mein armer Kopf ist mir verrückt, mein armer Sinn ist mir zerstückt.
It's so beautiful. And the trick is, how does that become this? Okay, let's figure out how those two can become each other. First, let's listen to Jesse Norman scat singing the piano line from Gretchen am Spinnrade.
Do it again, even jazzier. Do 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 wa, do 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 wa. Mm-hmm. Try something else. Try.
Ya da ni di da do do wa da 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 ni di 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 di. Mi da ba da 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 mi da 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 mi ya da ni di 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 di. Wa la wa la 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 wa la ni di 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 wa la 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 ni.
And let's hear her and me talk about how those two ideas can merge. So What and Gretchen am Spinnrade.
You are so bad. Mm-hmm. I think you're onto something there, lady. Oh, let me tell you.
Right?
Oh, yes.
So when he asked for post-bop, you do the tempo. And that's how these things start to mash up against each other.
Uh-huh.
Isn't that great?
Oh, yes.
So when you sing that, I mean, we just got it that last time. It's perfect. But okay. Just that these things that one, I mean, the whole thing about the poem is one thing instantly changes into another. Yes. And at one moment you think it's Schubert, and the next moment it's So What.
Yes, exactly.
And that's Langston's world.
Yes.
You know.
Wonderful.
So that's perfect. Great.
So there it is. And now let's listen to its first iteration in Cultural Exchange, which is the first movement of Ask Your Mama.
Dust of dingy atoms blows a scratchy sound. Amorphous jack-o'-lanterns caper, and the wind won't wait for midnight for fun to blow doors down.
Anyway, do you get it?
Got it.
Good. Got it. Good. Now we know. Now we can go home. No, not yet. Okay. First, we're going to do some stuff for you. So I want to do the movement Ride Red Ride for you. Let me go over the text so you get an idea of how this really works, the nuts and bolts. So here's the first page of the second movement, Ride Red Ride. Now, always in this poem, he means at least two things at once. So Ride Red Ride both refers to a song that was performed by Lucky Millinder called Ride Red Ride and refers to his relationship with communism, Hughes's relationship with communism. So, I want to see my mother, mother, when the roll is called up yonder in the quarter of the Negroes. Mother, mother refers to not only his mother, but also his mother's mother and the sense of ghosts and ancestry, which is a really big recurring theme in the poem. And he says in the right-hand margins, maracas continue, rhythms of when the saints go marching in. And you can see how the text scans. I want to see my mother, mother, when the roll is called up yonder. It scans like when the saints go marching in. And you've got, it's hard to see because it's all caps, but that's part of what the joy of discovering this poem was, is finding the sort of how to pull the music out of it. So he gives us maracas, he gives us when the saints go marching in, and now in italics he gives us tell me how long must I wait? Can I get it now? So he's referring back to the hesitation blues that we saw at the beginning of the poem. Sa-ira, or must I hesitate? Ira, boy, ira. And in the court of the Negroes, tu abuela, donde está? Where is your grandmother? So again, he's referring to this sort of, you know, to the ghosts. Lost in Castro's beard, tu abuela, donde está? Blown sky high by Mount Pele. So the piano gently supplies a lyrical calypso joined by the flute that ends in a high discordant cry. And he goes on, was she fleeing with Lumumba? Who knows who Lumumba was? There you go. Wow, this is a great audience. We're in the public library. Okay. Far out. I usually stump people with that one. Grandpa's grandma's granny always took the other side, a little rum with sugar. Ah, Morena, donde está? Where are you? Now, this is really a key element. You see that this is a recurring theme in the poem, too. Santa Claus, forgive me. Okay, who is Santa Claus? Santa Claus is the white mythical figure who gives gifts. Is that for me? No. Okay. The white mythical figure who gives gifts. But your gift books are subversive, which they wouldn't have been. Your dolls are interracials. You'll be called by Eastland. Okay, nobody knows who Eastland was, right? Okay, this is a great audience. When they ask you if you knew me, don't take the Fifth Amendment. So I don't need to tell you this is referring to the McCarthy hearings. Okay, you guys are too smart. In the quarter of the Negroes, riding in a Jaguar Santa Claus, seemed like once I met you with Adam Powell for chauffeur who famously drove through Harlem in a Jaguar. But I think what he's doing is evoking this kind of dreamy sequence now with your hair blowing back in the wind and loud and lively up-tempo Dixieland jazz for full chorus until the end. So let's listen to a little bit of this thing, shall we? Okay. Oh, I start. Oh, I've got to hold this thing. But I have things I have to do. Okay, ready? Okay.
My mother, mother, when the roll is caught up yonder in the quarter of the Negro,
tell me how long must I wait? Can I get it now, or must I
blown sky high by Mount Pele?
Donde está? Donde está?
Was she fleeing with Lumumba?
Grandpa. grandmas, grandmas, granny always took the other side. A little rum, sugar.
Or was it sugar or rum?
A little rum with sugar.
Ay, morena, ¿dónde está?
Grenadine, Granada, or de sangre es la gota?
Ay, morena, ¿dónde está?
Here are, boy, here are.
Forgive me, Santa Claus, but your gift books are subversive. Your dolls are interracial. Forgive me, Santa Claus, in the quarter of the
Bravo. Okay. Going on, although it's hard to. Shades of Pygmy, another movement. So I think Langston Hughes had this kind of hypertextual vision of this piece. I mean, it would have been literally impossible for me to compose it without the internet, I think, because of all the research. I would have had to spend a lot more time here than I do, let's put it that way. But I think that he had this multimedia vision. I mean, he was really, he really saw ahead. You know, it's funny because the all caps to me seem like a silent scream. You know, if you got an email with all caps in it, you would think someone was screaming at you. And I think Hughes kind of was at this point at the end of his life. But what we're trying to do is, I don't know, think about this as a multimedia work. And we're looking at the future. What could this piece be if it were a film, for example? So I want to play you, and this is really a sneak preview, and it's really rough, but it's a work in progress, a film for the movement Shades of Pygmeat. So take a look at it. Shades of Pygmeat, again, means a lot of things. It means shades of skin color. We were talking about this backstage. But it also means Pygmeat Markham. Oh, come on, nobody knows who Pygmeat Markham was, right? This is too good, this audience. He was, you know, Here Come the Judge, famously. And some call him the father of hip-hop. So let's take a listen and a look at Shades of Pygmeat.
Yeah, he, this court is now in session. His Honor, Judge Pygmeat Markham Poseidon.
Yeah, he,
the coat of swing is just about ready to do that thing. I don't want no tears, I don't want no lies. Above all, I don't want no alibis. This judge is hip, and that ain't all. He'll give you time if you
big or small. Fall in line or this coat is neat. Peace, brother.
Love. Here come the girls. Here come the girls. Everybody, everybody.
In the quarter of the Negroes, Belgium shadows Leopold. Premier Downing aging, General Boris beleaguered. Eastland and Marlin deceased. Dead or alive, dead or alive, dead or alive. Their ghosts cast shadows. Their ghosts cast shadows. Their ghosts cast shadows. In the quarter of the Negroes. Shadows.
Shadows,
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 shadows, shadows. Where Negroes sing so well.
Where Negroes sing so well.
Where Negroes sing so well.
Sing so well, sing so well, sing so well, sing so well, so well, so well, so well, so well.
Jesus, Lord, amen. To Jesus.
oppression by any other name is just about the same. Casts a long shadow. Adds a dash of bitters to each song. Makes of almost every answer a question. And of men of every race or religion, questioners.
I think it could make a pretty good movie. I don't know. All right, so Gospel Cha-Cha, we'll do a little bit of this for you live. Let's look inside the movement from the performance standpoint. So, that's not very easy to read, but it's okay. So, it starts out, Gospel Cha-Cha, kind of this groovy version of the world in the quarter of the Negroes, like this touristy, fabulous vacation to the Caribbean, where the palms and coconuts cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha like castanets in the wind's frenetic fists, where the sand seas and the sea gourds make maracas out of me. Erzuli plays a tune. Erzuli is a voodoo god. On the bongos of the moon. So it's this kind of fabulous, you feel the tropical breeze. It's like Hollywood, Technicolor, tropical, Caribbean. Let's hear some of it.
In the quarter of the Negroes, where the papa palms and coconuts cha 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 cha. Cha 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 cha, like castanets in the wind's frenetic fist. Cha cha cha, where the sand sails and the sea gourds make maracas out of me, me, me.
Sax solo, body, body, yadu, 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 di, yadu, yoda, papa.
Yes.
Erzuli plays a tune on the bongos of the moon.
So there it is, Louis B. Mayer. So Hugh sets us up and says, the world is groovy, and then let's look inside really what's going on. So in the quarter of the Negroes, mamas, mamacita, papa, papiamento, again, referring to ancestors, Dambala, Weta, Ogun. I don't even need to tell you what the references are. You're all so smart. Does everybody know those? Awesome. More voodoo gods. Shadows, where the shadows of the Negroes are the ghosts of former glory, referring to the Haitian Revolution. in the quarter of the Negroes, where the shadows of the Negroes are the ghosts of former glory, in the quarter of the Negroes, shadows, Ay Bahia. Bahia was the largest slave port in the New World, 250,000 slaves brought into Bahia. So now we start to really turn the page on looking inside of what's going on. Now those gorgeous Louis B. Mayer sunsets are stained with blood. The clear green crystal water and that cry, the slave cry, turned to music, where the sea sand and the sea gourds make claves of my sorrows. Remember before we had the cute maracas out of me? Now we've got clave, the key to my sorrow, in the wind's frenetic fists, in the quarter of the Negro's shadows.
In the quarter of the Negroes, mama, mamacita, papa, papi, amento. Ghosts of former glory in the quarter of the Negroes.
Different feeling. Isn't she fabulous? She's like Leontine Price. I mean, honest to God, it's like having Leontine Price with us. It's so beautiful. It's true. It's true. Well, it goes on. So, more religion. Dambala Wado, the Virgin, Bedward, Alexander Bedward, John Jasper, Jesus, Daddy Grace, all charismatic preachers of the time. And in fact, Jessie told me that she remembers when she was a child growing up in Augusta, Georgia, Daddy Grace coming to town in a pink Cadillac with pink fingernails. I'm not saying anything. Okay. So Hughes asked for gospel music with a heavy beat. And we talked about it and what would be right. And Jessie suggested Dunn Made My Vow to the Lord. And she said normally Dunn Made My Vow to the Lord is done, like we've heard the Fisk Jubilee singers do it, but Dunn Made My Vow to the Lord, kind of this upbeat thing. And she felt it with a heavy beat. And Tara, we were talking during rehearsal yesterday. How was it done in your church?
It was the time, the point in time where there's an altar call and you come back fresh from the altar and you make a vow, and it's like you're honoring your, or reaffirming your commitment to the Lord.
Will you sing it like you did, like you've heard there?
Made my vow to the Lord, and I never will turn back. I will go,
I shall go to see what the end will be.
You said something so incredible yesterday, though. You said you reaffirm your commitment even when you're not sure if you really believe.
No, it's not that if you're sure you believe, you're not sure if it's going to change. So you just have to have faith that in that moment that things are going to, you believe, but, you know, faith that things will change is sometimes it's not always, you don't feel that it's possible.
Still waiting for the change.
Still waiting for the change. Okay. Still today.
Still today.
Especially.
Which is what the poem's about. Mm-hmm. And Janai, you were saying that you had the confusing childhood of growing up Catholic and Pentecostal. Mm-hmm. And was that like a musically totally confusing experience for you?
Very, very, yes. My father was Catholic and my mother and grandmother Pentecostal. So I went to both churches. I liked the Catholic for certain things, but I love the music in the Pentecostal church. So, you know.
And what happened? You were telling me yesterday that how did Dun Made My Vow come up in the church?
My grandmother's church was kind of small, so all the pastor was preaching in the middle of a sermon. Sometimes, you know, some of the old ladies would get the spirit, and they'd just start humming and singing, and, you know, everybody would just stop, and the whole congregation kind of just catches on, and the organist quickly is trying to find what key they're in, because they're changing all over, you know, they're like, quickly. But everybody would break out in song, and it's just, it was very normal. Still to this day happens. If they get moved by the Spirit, they will bust out in a song and everyone joins in.
That's so beautiful. Well, I think what Hughes was talking about was the complexity of all of that and how religion is something that in his mind was used to sort of as a vehicle of hope that sometimes wasn't realized. So here's a perfect example of that in this text. I tried, Lord knows I tried, Dambala, voodoo god. I prayed, Lord knows I prayed, Daddy, Father, God, Daddy, Grace, whomever. Will somebody please listen? Okay, and let's do a little of this for you. Dun Made My Vow. Beautiful. Oh, God, it's so inspiring. I don't know. Okay. So I want to show you a little bit of Horn of Plenty, which is a really, really complicated movement. Singers like O, singers like Odetta, and that statue on Bedloe's Island, managed by Saul Hurock. Dancers Bojangles, late lamented. So it's really, it's a movement about African-American performers who succeed and the great price that they have to pay in order to succeed. And I think that there's no better measure of that price than to see Bill Bojangles dance with Shirley Temple. So what I did is I took a dance from The Littlest Rebel, which is a 1935 film, and Bill Bojangles plays her slave, and they need to ask for money to go to the North to ask Lincoln to get her rebel father out of jail. So it's a little complex a scene. So what you'll see is the dance, and then I transcribed the tap dance exactly, which was actually unbelievably difficult. And I made it for 4 marching bass drums, because what I wanted to do was add weight to Bojangles' steps. Let's take a look at a little bit of that. So that's what Carnegie Hall looked like when we did it there with the 3 back panels with film being projected on them. And here's the scene.
No, child. It's going to take more money than what we got.
How do people get money?
I know how to get some more money. Come on, honey, child. Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Ho.
Complicated. So Derrick Bell was a friend of mine, a great, great thinker, lawyer, activist, and an angel on my shoulder during this process. He's one of the many people that I asked, can I do this? And this is an email that he sent to me, which is unbelievable. Well, Laura, it is so poignant, so sad. I must leave to you the decision as to its appropriateness. Damn, where's Langston when we need him? Would he see the racial subordination inherent in that scene of the black man essentially begging the white folks for money? Or would he rather recognize the elevation of the human spirit as this talented young white girl transcends the bar of color to see beyond his skin color, his humanity, and thus hers? So, to conclude, we'll listen to a little bit of Bird in Orbit, and we'll sing along for part of it, too. Here is a convergence of many, many themes. Deep River, Glory, Glory, Hallelujah, and Hughes quotes from Sojourner Truth's famous Ain't I Woman speech, which is, I look at the stars, and it's this incredible moment where, you know, I look at the stars and I wonder where they be, where she's asking about her children. Are they looking at the same stars, stars at stars, stars? So let's take a listen to a part of it, and then we'll all join in.
I'm asking Grandpa, asking, were you married by John Jasper of the Dumont Cosmic Conscience?
Grandpa, did you hear the old folks say how, say how?
Douglas Beard and John Brown's white and longer. Lincoln's like a clothes brush.
And how Sojourner, how Sojourner, to prove she was a woman, woman, bared her, bared her bosoms, bared in public to prove, prove, prove she was a about her children sold
find her in the TV.
And that's it. Thank you. Thank you all so much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. That's unbelievably kind. Thank you. Thank you. And we hold you from behind. Thank you. Thank you. That is so kind. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And by the way, if you want the CD, it's for sale in the lobby. So I guess we can start questions with, why isn't this poem better known? Why has it been so critically underserved? And you can ask us questions, too, not just me.
Really simple question. I missed at least one of the references in the line, why is May, M-A-I, not May?
That's the only, that is the most obscure reference, but somebody knew it. Who knows who that is?
Here.
Mae Britt, who was Sammy Davis Jr.'s wife.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes, very good, though.
I missed one reference as well. I know Billy Strayhorn, but I didn't get the Billy Strayhorn in the lobby in the...
And Luther.
Billy
Strayhorn hid backstage with Luther.
Who's Luther?
Guess what? None of us can figure that one out. And the only thing that I can think is it's a reference to his closeted sexuality. And there are rumors, there were always rumors about Langston Hughes, too. No, I can't find it. A Rampusad doesn't know it. Nobody knows it. We don't know who Luther is, but that's what, you know, hid backstage. I don't know. But good, good stumper.
Okay, from right over here.
Okay. I think the dancing with Shirley Temple and Bojangles, he does a thing where there's an old African American expression. It's sort of like Pig Latin. You know what I mean by Pig Latin?
Yes.
Where he's going, Well, that's actually like a jargon, like a language. Mm-hmm. And what they're doing is they're making fun of people looking at them dance.
Right.
Did you get that?
And it's so perfect for this poem because it's this constant kind of pulling back and meta looking at things. And so you're enjoying the dance, but you're making fun of the dance. And if you look, I mean, of course, the director didn't intend this, but if you look at that scene, it's pretty interesting because there's one African American in the entire scene. Did you see him?
No.
With a rebel cap on. So it's pretty crazy stuff. I mean, that film is really a crazy film to look at. And it makes Gone with the Wind look like, you know, they had, like, some sense in them, which is pretty hard to do.
And it's a reference to Uncle Tom's Cabin.
Yeah.
In the because she has this distance between their ages.
Right.
So there's no sexual tension.
Right. Yeah. He's the father figure. He's her father figure.
And she becomes Shirley Temple Black.
Right. Okay. Woo. By the way, had to personally give us permission to use this clip, which she did. Yeah, yeah. No other questions, oh my God. Well, I'd like to say one thing, though, that I didn't say. I think that if you enjoyed the piece at all, it's largely due to a woman who's sitting in the audience, whose name is Helene Marisch, who was my piano teacher, and who, when I started studying with her when I was 9 years old, and who saw no boundaries between classical music and jazz, and it was all the same to her, and that's the way she taught me, and that's why I can do what I can do. So thank you. Thank you.
I'd like an answer to the first question you asked. Why? I taught Black Lit, and I didn't have this information. And I'm astonished at my own gap in knowledge. And I wonder the answer that you can give us.
You know, it's an impossible question to answer. I have some ideas. It's not A Negro Speaks of Rivers. It's not a poem that you look at and you say, yeah, or Let America Be America Again. And they're all kinds of, they're all studies, I think, for this poem. It's all caps. It's a scream. It was written in response to the white riots at the Newport Jazz Festival. It's not easy to read. And there are a lot of references, and it takes something to do it. It's not easy. And I think that's why. And I think that's one of the reasons why. I mean, first of all, to say that the message is poignant today is almost ridiculous. I wish it weren't. I wish that it would stop being so relevant. I keep hoping that it will be, you know. But every day I'm wrong about that. And I think that it's a masterwork of literature. And I think that what happens is that Hughes gets kind of like, you know, it's African-American literature, Black Lit. It's just great literature. It's songs of innocence and experience. And it's been relegated to the side, and I'm sick of it. It's enough. And this is an important work by a great American thinker and poet, and it needs to be something that's read in every classroom and studied. You know. Any for our people, too? They're so awesome.
That's exactly where I was going. With that, I wanted to ask what your accompanying musicians and vocalists, what their experience was participating in this work.
Wow. I've always been a fan of Winston Hughes, but I never really looked this deeply into his work until, you know, Laura called me a year ago to ask me to be a part of this recording. And like she's stated so many times, it's just the words, and especially in this piece, is just so, it really just gets you so much, especially with what's going on in the world today, with what's happening right now. It just grabs you. And it's hard for me sometimes to, you know, even now, just to sit here and hear it, and, you know, you fill up with so much tears, you know. It's just so beautifully written, even though he's screaming and yelling at the top of his lungs what's going on, you know. So I have enjoyed tremendously, and thank Laura for letting me be on this project. It's really opened my eyes, and I've done already another recording of some Langston Hughes poems, so I'm excited to keep looking into his work.
I'm a songwriter, and this is the first time I've performed in 20 years. So I'm a songwriter, and I met Laura on another Langston Hughes project, Black Nativity, the film, starring Jennifer Hudson, Forest Whitaker, Angela Bassett, Tyrese. And I was a songwriter, co-producer, associate producer, and Laura was a composer, and she became my spirit mom and mentor and friend. And I'm so incredibly grateful and thankful to know both her and Nora and Benny. And Langston Hughes, like, it's not even a question that if people just paid more attention to not only his poems, but words and wisdom from yesteryear, then we wouldn't be in the mess we're in today.
Perfect.
I'm just curious, because of an association I had 30 years ago with the San Francisco Ballet, why you chose the San Francisco Ballet Orchestra.
Because they did it for nothing. No, and do you know how significant that is?
Oh, boy, do I negotiated with AFFM over some of their...
What they did was donate their EMG to the project, which means their electronic music guarantee. Many orchestras, they all used to, but have a certain amount of recording they have to do every year. So they all got together and voted that this was a significant project and gave 3 days of their time to it, which is awesome. Unbelievable. And they play great.
In the 1980s and I think into the 90s, the music director was Dennis DiCoteau, who was a rarity, one of the great African-American conductors.
That I didn't know.
And he told me stories about when he would show up in some cities that there was sometimes, what are you doing type of questions about him having that type of a position.
Oh, incredible. Well, there you go.
So I want to thank you all for a magnificent performance.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Aloud is made possible through support provided by the Ralph M. Parsons Foundation, the National Endowment for the Arts, and Errant Fox. Additional support provided by the Los Angeles Public Library, the Stay Home and Read a Book Ball, and individual Library Foundation members. Media support is provided by LA Weekly, KCRW 89.9 FM, and KUSC 91.5 FM.